is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight, Game 5, Warriors-Raptors, the timeout game.
Oh, geez, Mike, this is terrible. Listen, I've got a lot to say tonight, so I might go off on a few tangents. First of all, what the heck is that timeout? 3 minutes and 3 seconds up left. Kawhi's just scored, I think, what, 10 straight points, Mike, I think was what it was at the time. You call a timeout, and the play that you run out of the time, there's no reason to call a timeout there. We were talking before the podcast that the under three timeout is an automatic TV timeout. There's no reason to call a timeout there. Ride the momentum. What you do to yourself is you put yourself in a position that now Golden State can sub out people and make some changes. I can't remember who Golden State substituted, but they went in and had a game plan. And if you notice, they doubled Kawhi as soon as he got inside the key, and he took that terrible fadeaway shot because no one else was moving on Toronto's. They obviously had a play call set up, was not working, and they didn't have a backup plan because they were just going to be like, oh, Kawhi scored 10 straight. Let's get him the ball again. No clue whatsoever what to do with it. Terrible shot, and it just idiotic, moronic, stupid. I mean, that is a Paul Silas play, Mike. That is terrible.
All right. So I agree 100% on the timeout. When the timeout was called, I literally just was like, I can't believe they called timeout. That building was going insane. They had just scored, I think, 6 in a row or maybe 8 in a row. I know Kawhi had made the last 8 points, so he hit 2 threes and then hit the jump shot. But you're 3 minutes away from winning the NBA title. Your building is going crazy. The Warriors, obviously they didn't quit. Obviously they weren't about to quit, but they were reeling. I mean, at that point, they were ready for one more punch to be thrown, and that game was going to be over. One more basket. At that point, they're up 8 with 2 minutes and 45 seconds to go. I don't think the Warriors come back from that, and I would love to. I'm sure Nick Nurse is going to be asked about it in the press conference.
He's actually on the stand right now. Obviously, I'm not listening, but he's on it. He's got to be asked. I hope that was the first question they asked him.
It just made no sense. I mean, I didn't understand it in the moment, and even if it had turned out differently, and they had gone on to win, it still was a very, very poor decision because you had all the momentum for Toronto. You had the building going crazy. I mean, it was going absolutely crazy. And you had Kawhi on the run that he was on, and it all just disappeared after that timeout. And I just don't think you can allow the Warriors there to reset themselves and go into the timeout and say, hey, it's not over yet. Because it was very, very close to over. They were teetering on the edge, and one more little push would have sent them tumbling down. And it's unfathomable to me why you would call a timeout there. It just made no sense. There was absolutely no reason for it, and it cost them. I mean, obviously there were lots of things that went on after that, but regardless, that set up the whole final 3 minutes of the game and allowed Golden State to come back and steal one, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that the best way to do this is let's go rewind back to the beginning of the game and kind of go through it. Does that sound good?
Sure.
Okay. So obviously the Warriors came out strong, hitting basically every shot. And I was talking to a friend and I said, listen, if the Warriors keep shooting at this rate, the three pointers, there's no chance Toronto's going to win this game. Like, I just thought, you know, Durant came out 11 points early, 3 of 3 from three-point land. Clay was hitting them. Steph was hitting them. I think that one point the Warriors were 8 for 12 from three, and it just looked like it was going to be one of those games where they were going to shoot lights out. And then, you know, Toronto kept it in the game in the first quarter. They hung around, despite I think at one point even falling down to 11 points or something like that in the first quarter. Anything else first quarter that stands out to you?
So, I guess the big thing that stands out for me is obviously Durant getting back into the game. But then I still thought, even though he scored, I think he had all of 11 of his, all 11 of his points in the first quarter, but he still just looked, and that's totally to be expected. I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know the extent of what that injury was before whatever happened tonight ends up being revealed, but he was clearly being careful with it. Let's put it that way. He was clearly being careful. He was clearly trying to stay on the perimeter. He was clearly trying to just go easy on it. And the fact that he scored 11, despite doing that, tells you how important he is, was his plus minus for the game. He was the only, I think he was the only Warriors starter that was positive. No, I take that back. Sorry. He had the highest plus minus. He was plus 6. Steph and Clay were both in the negatives. So was Draymond, and Iguodala was plus 3. But he looked like he was being very, very careful with it, which obviously in retrospect makes a ton of sense since he got injured again. But yeah, I thought the Warriors were off to a good start. You mentioned the 3-point shooting, and they ended up shooting 20 of 42 for the game, 47%, whereas Toronto was 8 for 32. So you get outscored by 36 points from three. It's pretty difficult to win a game. And as it turned out, it was only a 1-point margin of victory. So yeah, I think that story was being told already in the first quarter that Golden State was going to outshoot them from the 3-point line. And that storyline held for the rest of the game.
Yeah. So we'll move to the second quarter. And obviously the glaring thing that happens in the second quarter is Durant's injury. Now I have a few takes on this, Mike, and I was not happy with the Toronto fans cheering for his injury. I thought it's very disrespectful, ridiculous. I mean, I don't like the Warriors, okay? I don't. Let's be honest. I don't like them primarily because of our thing with the Cavs. But the fact that you cheer a Hall of Fame player when he gets injured is downright ridiculous. And I found myself rooting for Golden State at that point because I couldn't stand Toronto winning the game and having those fans celebrate after they cheered for Durant's injury. And I'm not even a huge Durant fan, I'd be clear. I'm a fan of his game. I'm not really a fan of him and his burner accounts and all that nonsense. But I just thought that was ridiculous. And, you know, part of me is happy that Golden State won because they couldn't win. The Toronto fans didn't get to celebrate on their floor tonight after cheering for his injury. I think that's classless in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the word I was going to use. It was clearly classless. And obviously not every Toronto fan was cheering and clapping, but there were plenty that were. And I know the one shot of Durant when he first went down, the live shot when he was sitting on the ground holding his calf, Achilles, whatever it ends up being. And there was the one fan that was standing there waving at him and waving goodbye. And I just don't know how you revel in a player's injury. I understand the fact that injuries are a part of the game and can help you if you're Toronto. Obviously, if Durant's not in there or Looney can't play or DeMarcus Cousins is compromised, it gives your team a better chance to win. And I totally understand that. But in the moment, when a guy is on the floor and he's just gotten hurt, to boo him, to cheer that he's going out, seems totally ridiculous. It's one thing tomorrow when you find out that he's injured and you really look at how that impacts the series and you can think to yourself, well, it's an advantage for our team that he's out and we got to take advantage of it. I mean, that's part of the game. But to boo another human being, to cheer against another human being when he's just gone down and been injured, totally classless for the people that were doing that. Yeah. Totally classless.
So a fellow who Head Start Basketball alumni, Steve Freem, and I were texting a little bit during the game, and he said, and this was a very good point. He said, made me think that maybe they're a S-word hockey fan thing to do, and Toronto is just like that. Is just that Canadian that they were cheering because they thought maybe because in hockey when people beat up each other they get excited. So
could be. I don't know if about I don't know enough about hockey crowds to comment on that one.
I don't know, but that's what Steve thought, and I thought that was kind of funny actually.
It's possible.
But,
it's possible.
But I know. I think, you know, and I think going off of that injury, I think the big thing that happened right after that was DeMarcus Cousins, that spurt that he brought to that team. right after Durant's injury. I thought it was huge. He was clearly out of the rotation. All right, he was out of the, they put Bogut in ahead of him because he was so bad in game four. He was atrocious in game four. And they put him out there tonight, and he scored a lot of straight baskets and ended up taking a lead, you know. And they spread it up to, I think at one point, 13 there. Right, Mike? 12 yeah. or 13?
Cousins was really good, and he was the victim of a couple questionable calls. I didn't think the call that on the goaltend, I didn't think it was a goaltend, although I don't think you could have reversed that there late in the game. And then the moving screen with whatever that was, 15 seconds to go. It was probably a moving screen, but that same play happens 40 times a game, 50 times a game. I don't even know what the number is. What was funny is that I think they showed it. I think it was the highlight they were showing at the end. I can't remember if it was during the game or after the game, but the three that Steph hit coming off the curl that I think tied the game, and it was the exact same play. Like Cousins did the exact same thing. The only difference was is that Van Vliet went wide to kind of avoid the screen as opposed to running into it. But Cousins did the exact same thing, you know, stuck his hip out just a little bit as he swung and pivoted into the screen. And, you know, you could call that a whole bunch of times. So I thought he was the victim of those two calls, but he was definitely a key component. And without that little spurt that you just described in the first half when Durant went out, yeah, I think they're in trouble. And they needed somebody to step up, and clearly he provided some of the spark and some of the scoring that they lost when Durant went out. And he was important. He was an important player tonight. And is he perfect and is he healthy? No. But he did a lot of good things that helped them win tonight. And without him, they don't win. They don't get that game and get it back to Oracle.
All right. So breaking news, Bob Myers on the stand just announced that he's fighting back tears. I was listening to a little bit. He confirms that Kevin Durant does have an Achilles injury, and it seems to be a torn Achilles, but they're getting further MRIs tomorrow. So there you go.
I don't know. Like I said, we're never going to know for sure, but you just wonder what the extent of that injury was before tonight. Was it a partial? It just doesn't seem like a medical staff. I don't care how much the guy wants to play, and I understand wanting to play, but if there's any chance that that's going to turn into an Achilles tendon tear, I just don't know how you let the guy out on the floor. It just seems like you can't let him go out there if there's a chance that that's what's going to happen. And, you know, I mean, I hate to speculate based on what we don't know for sure. And obviously his health is the main concern, but, you know, what are the implications for this going forward? So he has a player option for next year. He's going to be out for probably
basically
what?
The whole year. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins tore his when last year.
So, I mean, DeMarcus tore it towards the end of the season last year. And he came, but when did he come back this year?
February, but you could tell he wasn't like.
Right. I mean, he's not going to be back at full capacity no matter how he comes back next year. So I guess the question is, you know, there's not a tremendously great history of guys coming back from Achilles tendon injuries. If it's a torn Achilles, to be and play at the level that they did prior to that injury. So does he now re-up and just roll over that player option and come back to Golden State?
If I'm him, I do that.
If you're somebody else, I mean, I guess the question is there a max deal still out there for him that somebody's going to throw all that money at him without knowing if he's healthy and how he's going to come back from it?
Could you just imagine Knicks fans right now, Mike?
I mean, no, it would be terrible because now you're like, what do you do? What do you do? Do you, if you don't sign him, if you don't pursue him, you know, you're going to be, I think, somewhat upset that you might lose him. I mean, I guess maybe you just have to wait a year. But things change, and I don't know what every team's salary cap looks like as far as, you know, can you sign him this summer versus next summer or whatever. But then if you do sign him, I mean, you have no idea what you're getting. I mean, he could be 60% of the guy that he is now. You don't know how he's going to heal or how he's going to recover from it. And he's certainly not going to be right for at least, I mean, next year he's probably not even going to play if he plays at all. And he's certainly not going to be very good. And then the following year, what percentage is he of the pre-injury Kevin Durant? And by the time, let's say it takes him, he doesn't play hardly at all next year, it takes him one more season of kind of getting through and recovering, and then you say, okay, he's going to be back 3 seasons from now. At that point, he's going to be like 32 years old. I don't know that I want to pay somebody coming off an Achilles tendon injury, no matter who it is. I don't know that I want to pay somebody whatever it is, you know, $40 million a year or whatever it is he's going to make. Talk about one more monkey wrench thrown into what's going to happen this summer and where guys are going to end up. I don't know. I mean, I think if I'm him, I think I roll over that player option and stay with the Warriors for one more year. But again, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. So Kevin Durant took to his Instagram account. Dub Nation going to be loud as F for Game 6. I'm hurting deep in the soul right now. I can't lie, but seeing my brothers get this win was like taking a shot of tequila. I got new life, LOL. Hashtag dubs. So that's what Durant wrote. So,
well,
I don't know.
I think it was somewhat telling that, you know, Iguodala and Steph both walked back to the locker room with them during the game while the game was going on. I think that spoke volumes, at least about the relationship between those three guys. Now, maybe it's strained with other people. And again, none of us know. Nobody knows what goes on behind closed doors in the locker room and practice and in those guys' lives when the cameras aren't around and what the relationships are like. But to me, the fact that they were both back there while game action was going on tells you something about the relationship between those three guys. And you feel bad. You said it earlier. I'm not a Warriors fan. I'm not necessarily a Durant fan. But, man, you feel for what he's gone through now to try to come back. And I hate to see that happen to anybody. And it's tough. It's tough. And I give the Warriors a lot of credit for being able to come back and pull this one out.
Yep.
I think they had a big assist from Toronto, like we already talked about. But still, you don't come back from 6 down after having had the lead basically the entire game and just seeing it slip away and having that building going crazy. You don't come back from that without being totally resilient and mentally tough, and having been there before and being able to come back was, you know, credit to them. And
yeah, so I guess the only other thing that I'd like to talk about a little bit is the last possession. You want to talk about the last possession?
Sure. There were some interesting things on the last possession, so I'm curious to hear what you have to say, and then I'll throw my take in there.
So here's the deal. If you're Toronto, Golden State has a foul to give, Mike. They have a foul to give. Why do you wait till 6 seconds left on the shot on the game to get the ball to Kawhi and attack? That reminded me so much of the terrible Cavs offense that we ran in LeBron's first iteration, where he would just get the ball with 6 seconds and then they would try to do something with it. And, you know, more times than not, probably back in that iteration, it didn't work. You got to attack the basket because they have a foul to give. And I couldn't believe that Warriors did not foul Kawhi, by the way. They doubled him. And the fact that they passed the ball to Kyle Lowry in the end, and he shot probably one of the worst shots, attempts at a game-winning basket I have probably can remember in NBA Finals history.
You don't like the shot that almost hit the back of the backboard? You're not a fan of that shot?
Listen, I'm telling you, Mike, it was just so bad. I don't know. Did Toronto have no timeouts left, or did they have a timeout? I don't know the answer to that question. Do you know the answer to that question?
I do not know the answer to that question.
I feel like they had a timeout because I feel like they didn't use any in the last 2 minutes. Maybe I'm wrong in thinking that. I mean, maybe they used their last timeout with that at that 3 minutes and 3 second mark, because I don't feel like they used another timeout, but maybe I'm misremembering. It was a terrible possession. Golden State had a foul to give. I couldn't believe Golden State didn't foul, like I said, when Kawhi got to the free throw line extended, and then they just kick it to Kyle Lowry, and oh boy, what a terrible shot. And I just can't fathom what they were doing there.
All right, so a couple things. One thing related to the last possession that didn't actually happen on the last possession. So I think Lowry's previous shot before that one was the wide open three in the – he was on the right wing.
Yeah.
And he was wide – I mean, he had forever to take it. And I'm looking at the I'm looking at the game, the play-by-play to figure out where that was in the fourth quarter. But he was just – I mean, he was wide open, and he missed it. And that was a huge play, and he missed it. And so he had previously obviously missed that shot, and then you get him in the fourth quarter, and you get that shot. And, it almost hit the back of the backboard. So I don't have as much of a problem with the getting it to Kawhi and not starting the offense until whatever, 6 seconds to go. I'm still a proponent of your best guy has the ball in his hands. Your best guy should, if I'm Kawhi, I just don't pass the ball. I don't care if I'm double teamed. I know there's always the LeBron makes the right play, but the best guys, there's a reason the best guys are the best guys, and that's because they come through in clutch moments and they make difficult shots. And in that situation, I'd rather have Kawhi shoot over a double team than have Kyle Lowry try to shoot an open three-pointer. I just would. And I felt that way with the Cavs and LeBron, and I'm all for in the first 48 minutes and 40 seconds, or I'm sorry, 47 minutes and 40 seconds of making the right basketball play. But I think in the end, the best player has to be selfish and just has to take the shot. But that being said, when the ball got swung to Lowry, the thing that was the most interesting to me about that play was Draymond. I don't know if you saw kind of how Draymond played that, but I forget after Kawhi made the pass, I can't remember who he passed it to. Maybe it was Danny Green, or I can't remember who he swung the ball to out of the double team who passed it to Lowry, because I don't think the pass didn't go directly from Kawhi to Lowry. But anyway, Gasol was on the block on that side of the floor. And so Draymond had two guys. He had Gasol, and he had responsibility to take Lowry. And you could see, like, he hung with Gasol. And then at the last second, when that pass was released and on its way to Lowry, right as it left, whoever that Raptors player was, whenever it left that guy's hands and headed towards Lowry, only then did Draymond leave Gasol and then close out and contest that Lowry three.
He didn't just contest it. He blocked it. Friend of the pod, Vasu just tweeted a picture, and Draymond got his hand on it.
Okay. So, I mean, the fact that he was able to do that, I mean, Gasol was literally on the block, and Draymond was like fronting him, or, you know, on the side, not letting the ball get into him. And he didn't leave Gasol until that pass was in the air. And the fact that he was able to cover that much ground and then not only contest, but I guess block the shot, that was just incredible defense. That's what struck me about it when I didn't see that live, but when I watched the replay, that was what really stood out to me, was just what a great play that Draymond made there to not allow the ball to go to Gasol and then get out there to contest Lowry's shot. And like I said, I'd rather see Kawhi force a bad shot than pass it to somebody else. I just would.
Yep. All right. It's that time, Mike.
All right, lay it on me.
The Magic Johnson tweets. Now, surprisingly, Magic only tweeted once and didn't even mention KD. So I don't know what's going on here. So he has tweeted twice since the game was over. Tonight, two superstars beat one. Steph with a three-pointer to tie the game, and Klay with a three to put the game away. We're just too much for Kawhi. That's the first tweet. And then he randomly tweets after that, congratulations to Tony Parker for an amazing career. And a big, big thank you for entertaining us for the past 18 years. Best of luck in your next chapter. Enjoy retirement. Not one word about Kevin Durant.
Well, you know, you gotta give it to Magic. He's giving a shout out to Tony Parker. That's nice of him to do that. Very nice of him to do that.
Just, the timing was a little weird, in my opinion. I don't know.
That's okay.
All right.
That's all right.
So I guess we can actually probably make a prediction about what's going to happen in Game 6, because, I mean, it's clear Kevin Durant's not playing. If I had to hedge my best, Looney's probably not playing because he re-aggravated tonight. I don't see him going back out there. Everyone else is go, and everyone for Toronto is a go. So do you want to make a prediction of what happens in Game 6?
All right, well, I'll say a couple things. One, I think the positive from the Warriors standpoint is it appears Clay is okay. I didn't really see him laboring at all tonight. I mean, he looked yep. very, very Clay-like. So that's good news. Looney, I mean, whatever's going on with his collarbone, and I mean, it clearly hurts. Although tonight they were calling it his chest. I mean,
it's a chest fracture in his chest cavity or something like that.
I think my take on it is, I guess maybe he's going to get x-rays or get it looked at again, but I'm guessing it's just something that either he plays through or he doesn't play through from a pain standpoint. And if it gets hit or he falls on it, it probably hurts more. And then he might have to sit out longer or can't play, but my guess is he'll play and, you know, just try to tough it out, but who knows? Then the other piece of it for the Warriors is just how do they bounce back? Does the crowd's going to be going crazy. Obviously it's the last game at Oracle, no matter what happens. So their crowd is going to be bonkers without a doubt. And to me, the fact that Clay was completely healthy and didn't have any signs of the hamstring injury makes me feel at least fairly good if I'm Golden State. I still think all the problems that we've talked about after game 2 and game 3 and game 4, you know, are still there. The spacing without Durant and who else is going to step up, those problems still remain. But I don't know. I think this is a tough game for Toronto to get over. I mean, you were that close. And
you should have won.
You should have won. I mean, you lost that game. That's a game that you should not have lost. If that game gets played out from the 4-minute mark 20 times, Golden State maybe wins 2, maybe wins 3 out of 20.
I was going to say 3. That's what I was going to say.
So, you know, it just not I don't think they're I think they have to be kicking themselves. And now you got to go back to the last game at Oracle. I don't know. I think Golden State's going to win. I don't know that I can point to any logical, strategic things that make sense as to why that is. The same advantages that allowed Toronto to win games 3 and 4 at Oracle are still there. They're not going away. Durant, obviously, now there's no chance that he's coming back and riding in on the white horse to save you. So you don't even have that possibility if you're Golden State, whereas before you had that, man, if we can just extend the series long enough that he comes back, it gives us a great chance. I mean, at this point, they are what they are. They got to ride with what they have. But I just something tells me that they're gonna get it done in Game 6, and we're gonna be back in Toronto for Game 7. I just don't think Steph, Clay, and Draymond lose Game 6 at home. I just don't think they do. I don't think this Toronto team is as good as the Cavs team that won the title in Game 7 on their floor. I don't think they're as good. And so I think Golden State's going to get Game 6. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. I think Golden State's going to get Game 6, and then we'll see. We'll see how it plays out and then make our decisions about what's going to happen Game 7. But you have to say Toronto let this one go through their grasp, and I completely agree with you. I just don't know that they can bounce back mentally from this, and I guess we'll have to see what happens. But you know, we get more basketball, I suppose, is a way to look at it.
Yeah, it's a positive. I mean, it's a positive to get another game out of the season, and it'll be interesting. Both teams have things to bounce back from, to think about, to kind of figure out where they are. I mean, it sounds weird, but you know, Toronto's got a lot to overcome now. I mean, you have to be sitting there kicking yourself if you're the Raptors. How do you come back from that? How do you come back from being 3 minutes away, up six, from winning the title, and now you're going back to Golden State's home court? You know, three-time champion. I don't know. That's tough. And then conversely, if you're the Warriors, you know, how do you come back from Durant goes down? Let's just say it's a torn Achilles. You know, he was trying to tough it out to help you, but now you know you don't have him psychologically. You know you're undermanned, you're depleted. You know how hard that you have to work in order to even score a basket. That's a lot to look at, too. Obviously, they're coming off this win, so they are going to feel better about themselves, and they're going to be at home and have the crowd behind them. So, but they still, it's not like they're going in there riding a high. Like, whoa, everything's going our way. I mean, they still have to be extremely, extremely wary that, man, you know, this could, I mean, they already beat them twice on their home floor. So it's not like they've had an invincible home court advantage all throughout the playoffs. I mean, the Clippers beat them twice. So, you know, the Raptors can very easily win this game, but I think Golden State's going to get it done. I think it's going to go seven, and then who knows? Who knows what happens from there? I think if you go to game seven, to me, depending on exactly how game six plays out, game seven, it's a toss-up. And I think all the things that we've talked about throughout this entire series is, you know, how do the role players play? Who shoots it better from three? Does Kawhi have a monster game, or Steph have a monster game, or are they just average for who they are? There's a lot of things that you can look at, and it'll be interesting once we have game six in the books, if Golden State does win, and obviously we'll jump back on and talk about what's going to happen in game seven. But wow, it was just, there were so many things going on in this game tonight that, you know, it's hard to even wrap your head around everything that happened. And to be honest, watching that whole game, it sort of felt inevitable, like Toronto was going to come back and get them. It felt like Golden State was hanging on by a thread, and I still, let's bring it full circle to that timeout. It was just, that timeout was ridiculous.
Atrocious.
I still can't believe if you're Nick Nurse and for some reason Toronto ends up losing this series, I mean, I don't know how you, I mean, you're going to regret that for the rest of your life. I mean, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life as it is, but if it costs you a title, man, it was just a stupid timeout. I would love to hear, I mean, I don't know what his press conference answer is going to be, but I would love to hear what the real answer was of why you would call a timeout in that situation. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. And we'll, you know, we'll just have to see what happens on Thursday night.
It's coming back not quick enough for, I'd like to, too bad they're not playing Wednesday, but all these 3-day breaks, I guess, give you more time to ruminate and think and game plan if you're Steve Kerr and Nick Nurse and figure out what you're going to do with what you have. So, all right, I think we'll wrap it up there. We've been going long enough. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.